With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
A Werewolf Shifter Romance Audiobook, written by Catherine Stewart. Prologue. 10 years ago. The air in the Neutral Valley tasted of sunlight, of summer truce. A younger Ronan, not yet 20 and barely a season into his role as the Blackwood Alpha, threw his head back and laughed. The sound was rich, unguarded, a startling contrast to the silence that would later claim him. Beside him, Maeve, his mate, squeezed his hand. Her scent of wild honey and river stone was a constant, calming presence. Her eyes, the color of a warm forest floor, they held the reflection of the clear, blue sky. "You're worrying again," she murmured, her voice a soft melody against the drone of cicadas. "Your brow is doing that little thing." She reached up, her thumb smoothing the space between his eyebrows. He caught her hand, bringing her knuckles to his lips. "I am the picture of Alpha Serenity," he countered, though the lie was plain even to him. This summit, it felt off. Alpha Vero of the Stonefang Pack watched them all with the placid stillness of a hunting cat. His smile never quite reached his eyes. Ronan's father had warned him of the man's ambition, but insisted this show of trust was necessary. Necessary for peace. "He just wants what's best for his people. Same as us," Maeve said. "Always the diplomat. Always seeing the best in others. Peace is worth a little discomfort, my love." Ronan looked at her, at the unwavering belief in her gaze, and let his own tension melt. She was right. For her. For the future they were planning. For the pups they hoped to have. Peace was worth anything. He leaned in, his nose brushing her temple, inhaling her scent. His anchor. The scent of home. "For you," he whispered into her hair, "I would be serene in a blizzard." The first scream, it ripped the idyllic afternoon in two. Ronan's head snapped up, on the far side of the clearing. Two of Vero's warriors, their diplomatic smiles gone, descended upon a Blackwood elder, before Ronan could process the betrayal. The air erupted, snarls, shouts, the sickening sound of claws meeting flesh, an ambush, a slaughter. His alpha instincts roared to life, a white-hot inferno of protective rage. "Maeve, behind me," he commanded, shoving her towards the ancient oak that marked the center of the valley. He shifted, bones cracked, reformed, a horrific ballet of flesh and fury. The world sharpened. Smells became textures. Sounds became colors. He was no longer Ronan. He was a beast of vengeance, a storm of black fur. He met the first Stonefang warrior with a guttural growl, his claws tearing through the traitor's throat. He turned, seeking the next threat, his world a red-tinged blur of violence. He saw his father go down, overwhelmed by three attackers. He saw Vero, standing back, a cold, triumphant smirk on his face, a general watching his battle plan unfold, perfectly. And then he smelled it. Fear, wild honey, river stone. Maeve, he whirled around, a frantic terror clawing through his rage. She wasn't behind the oak. No, she was standing over the fallen elder. Her own claws extended, her teeth bared in a desperate, valiant defense. An alpha's mate, a warrior. But she was facing two of Varro's largest brutes. No. The word was a strangled plea, a sound that should not have been possible from a beast's throat. He launched himself towards her, a desperate, flying tackle. The world seemed to slow. The 10 feet separating them stretched into an impossible mile. He saw the moment one of the warriors fainted left, and the other struck from the right. He saw Maeve's eyes widen, not in fear for herself, but in a final, loving plea for him. He was too late. He landed beside her as she fell. The scent of her blood, a sudden, coppery blight in the sunlit air, choked him. He shifted back. The pain of the transformation, nothing, nothing, compared to the agony ripping through his soul as he gathered her limp form into his arms. Her eyes were still open, their forest floor warmth dimmed into a vacant, winter brown. He howled. It was not a sound of rage or challenge. It was a sound of absolute, soul-shattering loss, an echo of a man breaking apart, the sound of a world ending. And in the silence that followed, as he knelt in the blood-soaked grass under the indifferent blue sky, Ronan, the Alpha of Blackwood, died in his place. A ghost of ash and vengeance began to form. 10 years. And still. The wind on this cursed ridge knew his name. It clawed at his thick cloak. A familiar, unwelcome ghost. Ronan stood before the petrified oak. Its blackened branches reached for a sky that offered no answers. Only cold, gray indifference. This was his church. A cathedral of ash and failure. Every year. On this day. He made the pilgrimage. A penance. A promise. He let the cold seep into his bones. Because he deserved it. He deserved to feel the echo of the ice that had claimed his world. Down below. His pack huddled in the warmth of the den. Safe. Isolated. He had made sure of it. Because that was all he had left to offer them. Safety born from his own unending winter. His hand rose. His gloved fingers tracing the deep scars in the ancient bark, scars left by claws. Their claws. A memory surfaced. Sharp and cruel, Maeve's laughter, like sunlight on water, silenced by a traitor's blade. Her scent of wild honey and river stone, swallowed by the coppery tang of blood. He squeezed his eyes shut. His heart, a useless stone in his chest, gave a hollow thump. You failed them. The wind whispered. You failed her. I know, he breathed, the words turning to frost in the air. His goal was simple on these days. Remember. Suffer. Never, ever forget. His internal state was a carefully controlled void. A dam holding back a decade of rage. A growl rumbled deep in his chest. A low, threatening growl meant for ghosts. What would happen if he let that dam break? And then, something shifted. The air grew heavy. The scent of pine and snow suddenly tainted by something else. Something alive. He lifted his head, his senses on fire. It was faint. Carried on the wind from the valley, from Stonefang lands, without warning. The first snowflake fell, then another, and another. Soon after, the sky unleashed a fury of white, a blizzard, unnatural, unseasonal, It wasn't just weather. It felt like a warning. His jaw clenched. An enemy. Here, on this day of all days. To make things worse, beneath the hated stone fang scent, there was something else, something impossibly familiar, like a half-forgotten lullaby. Ash leaf? No, it couldn't be. That scent had died with his mother. Just like that. The pilgrimage was over. His grief was shoved back into its box, replaced by the cold. Sharp purpose of an alpha whose territory had been breached. He turned his back on the dead oak, his eyes scanning the tree line. The blizzard roared, a beast unleashed, and in that moment, he felt it. Clear as day, change was coming. And it smelled like his oldest enemy. By the time he reached the den, the blizzard was a wall, a physical wall of white. The heavy stone door ground open, and warm. Familiar air washed over him, thick with the scent of roasted meat, wood smoke, and wolf. His pack, his responsibility. He stepped inside, letting his cloak fall from his shoulders. His world tilted from the roaring chaos outside to the tense quiet within. Kylia was waiting for him. Her hair, once the color of autumn leaves, was now streaked with the silver of a long winter. Her face, a roadmap of laugh lines turned to grief lines, was set in its usual grim expression. She held a steaming mug in her gnarled hands, but her eyes, they held no warmth. Deep down, he knew the truth. She was the pack's living memory, and her memories were all painful. "The ancestors are angry," she said, her voice raspy, like stones grinding together. "This storm, it isn't natural, Ronan. The world hasn't been natural for 10 years. "Old friend," he replied. His tone clipped. His goal was to project.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. With code STAPLE20.
Strength to be the unshakable pillar they needed. But his emotional state was frayed, the strange, phantom scent from the ridge still clinging to the edges of his senses. "It is the anniversary," she continued, her eyes boring into him. "You shouldn't have gone up there alone, not today." Because Kalia remembered everything. She remembered Maeve. She remembered Ronan's father, more importantly. She remembered the man he used to be. "I am the Alpha. I go where I please." The words were harsher than he intended. Maybe it was fate. But just as the silence stretched between them, a young wolf, barely more than a pup, scrambled into the main cavern. His fur was matted with snow, his eyes wide with panic. "Alpha," he panted, "a trespasser, on the southern ridge. Moving towards the river." Ronan's entire body went rigid. The southern ridge, closer now. His gaze locked with Kalia's. Her lips thinned into a bloodless line. He saw it all in her eyes. The fear, the hate, the echo of the massacre. And he saw the question she didn't dare ask. "Is it them? Are they coming back to finish the job?" "What did you see, Jorik?" Ronan's voice was dangerously calm. "A lone figure, Alpha, small, stumbling in the snow. A lone figure, small, to make things worse." It didn't make sense. No one traveled alone in a blizzard like this unless they were desperate, or a fool, or a trap. Seal the den, Ronan commanded, his voice leaving no room for argument. He turned back towards the entrance, his muscles coiling. No one follows me. Ronan, no. Kalia's voice was sharp with alarm. You cannot face them alone. But he was already moving. His personal stake was everything. It was the memory of the dead, the safety of the living. It was the promise he'd made to himself on that blood-soaked field. No Stonefang would ever set foot in his territory and live to tell the tale. This wasn't about strategy anymore. Before the words left her lips, he was gone, swallowed by the storm's white rage, by the forest held its breath. And he moved through the trees, a shadow, a whisper of vengeance against the screaming wind. The snow was deep, but his feet were sure. His senses stretched to their breaking point. He followed the scent. Stonefang. Filthy, arrogant, and rotten with the stench of betrayal. It grew stronger with every step he took, a foul perfume that made a growl rise in his throat. And then, he saw her. A small figure, huddled at the base of a massive pine, her dark cloak a stark slash against the snow. She was shaking, her head bowed against the storm. He slowed, his body moving on instinct, sinking into a predatory crouch. A trap? A scout? He didn't care. She was here. That was enough. As if pulled by a string, her head lifted, even from a distance. He could see her face was pale, her eyes wide with a fear that had nothing to do with him. Yet, without thinking, he closed the distance, a silent, deadly rush. He was on her before she could scream. His large hand clamped over her mouth, his other arm locking around her waist, lifting her from the snow with brutal efficiency. She thrashed against him, a wild, panicked thing. A muffled cry escaped her lips. Be still, he snarled into her ear, the command a low rumble of pure authority. In that moment, her scent flooded his senses. Overwhelming, the sharp, territorial stink of Stonefang was there, clear as day. Because of that, his hatred, a cold and familiar friend, settled over him like a shroud. But then, there it was again. Beneath the enemy taint, that other scent, the ghost, faint, sweet, and earthy, ashleaf. It was impossible. It made no sense. What's worse, it was coming from her. Her body moved on instinct, her elbow jammed hard into his ribs, a surprisingly strong blow. He grunted, his grip tightened, her eyes, wide and stormy gray, locked with his. The moment their eyes locked, something inside him shifted. He saw no cunning, no malice, only a desperate, raw terror, and something else, a flicker of defiance. She didn't know what scared her more, him, or what she was running from. And he didn't know what enraged him more, her presence, or the confusing lie her scent was telling him. He made a decision. He wasn't going to kill her here. No, that was too easy. He needed answers. Why was she here? What was this scent? Why did the sight of her make the ghost of his past rise up to choke him? So, he slung her over his shoulder, ignoring her muffled protests and the frantic beat of her heart against his back. He was taking her. She was his prisoner now. He turned toward the deepest, most isolated part of his territory, a place where secrets went to die. The blizzard howled, hiding their tracks. And just like that, everything changed. He had brought the enemy into his home, a living, breathing contradiction that threatened to unravel the cold, simple world he had built from the ashes of his heart. The heavy oak door of the holding cabin slammed shut. The sound was a dead, final thud, the sound of a tomb closing. He dumped his prisoner onto the dusty floor. She landed with a soft gasp, a wild thing caught in a snare. He towered over her, his shadow swallowing her small form whole. His goal was simple. Break her. Get answers. Because that's what you did with the enemy. Who sent you? He snarled, his voice a low rumble. She scrambled backwards until her back hit the cold stone wall. Her stormy gray eyes were wide, but even so, a spark of defiance still burned in them. I don't know, she stammered, her voice trembling. A weak lie, he shot back. Stone fangs are born liars. I'm not lying. Her voice gained a sliver of strength. I don't remember anything. Not my name, not my home. He laughed, a harsh, ugly sound. Convenient. He took a step forward. He would loom. Intimidate. Use his sheer size to crush her will. He wanted her to feel small, helpless. More importantly, he needed to be in control. But then, the air thickened. It was a sudden, suffocating pressure, as if the world was holding its breath. The flames in the hearth flickered wildly, casting dancing, distorted shadows on the walls. A low hum started, a vibration he felt deep in his bones, in his teeth. What is this? He froze, his hunter's instincts screaming that something was wrong. This wasn't normal, without warning. A wave of unseen energy slammed into him. It was a physical blow, stealing his breath and sending him stumbling back a step. His vision blurred. The scent of her, that impossible mix of Stonefang filth and clean. Sweet ash leaf exploded in his head. The room spun, and just like that, he wasn't in the cabin anymore. He was standing in a lavish room, all silk and gold, feeling a soul-crushing loneliness that was not his own. His heart ached with her sorrow. At the same time, Celine screamed, a raw, terrified sound. He knew, somehow, that she was on a blood-soaked field, seeing through his eyes, feeling his heart shatter as he held Maeve's dying body. The vision broke, in the span of a breath. He was back in the cabin. The air was still humming. He was panting, a cold sweat on his brow. Across the room, his prisoner stared at him, her face a mask of shared horror. Her chest rose and fell in ragged gasps. She had seen it. She had felt it. Truth be told, he didn't know what scared him more, the violation of his mind, or the look of terrified understanding in the eyes of his sworn enemy, in the quiet that followed. Ronan's thoughts spun. What in the name of the ancestors was that? Some kind of Stonefang witch magic? A curse? His first instinct was to lash out, because fear always made him angry. He paced the length of the small cabin, a caged beast, the stone floor cold beneath his boots. He needed to reassert control. Now. What did you do? He demanded, his voice a low, grrr roll. He was talking to her, but the question was for himself. What is happening to me? I didn't do anything, she whispered, her hands pressed to her temples. I saw a woman in your arms. Her voice cracked, her world tilted, just as his had. He flinched as if struck. The memory of Maeve was his alone, a sacred wound he never allowed anyone to see. The fact that this nobody had been inside his head, had touched his grief, was a violation beyond imagining. Fury propelled him forward. His alpha instinct, supercharged and raw from the strange magic, roared to the surface. He felt the change coming, the heat under his skin, the lengthening of his teeth. He was losing it. You lie, he roared, his voice distorting into something less human. The shadows in the room seemed to deepen, to writhe with his rage, before she could move. She did the last thing he ever expected, as he loomed over her, a breath away from unleashing 10 years of hate. She lifted a trembling hand. Not to defend herself, not to fight, but to reach for him. Please, she breathed, her voice a fragile thread in the roaring silence of his mind. Don't. Her fingers, small and pale, brushed against the back of his hand. And just like that, and everything changed. It wasn't a push. It wasn't a blow. It was a wave of calm, a gentle, cooling tide that washed over the raging inferno inside him. The heat under his skin receded. The pressure behind his eyes eased. He could breathe again. The urge to shift, to tear and rend, simply vanished. It was gone. He stumbled back, staring at his own hand as if it had been burned. Then he looked at her. She was watching him. Her own expression one of wide-eyed, dazed confusion. She had no idea what she had just done. Maybe it was fate that she possessed such power. He had faced down warriors, monsters, and the crushing weight of his own despair. But this small amnesiac woman had just quelled his inner beast with a single touch, with every heartbeat. A new, more terrifying question emerged. What was she? As the silence stretched, the air thickened with unspoken questions. The fury that had driven him for a decade was gone, replaced by a hollow, unnerving void. He had built his life on a foundation of hate, and she had just calmly kicked out the cornerstone. He felt adrift. He looked at her, truly looked, and saw not just a Stone Fang enemy, but an impossible puzzle. Why could she calm him? And why did the magic connect them? He had to know. Deep down, he knew the truth. Brute force wouldn't work here. He couldn't threaten answers out of her, because she didn't have them. Which meant, he had to change tactics. Without warning. Another wave of the solstice pulsed through the cabin. Weaker, this time. Less violent. He braced himself. A memory. Not his own. A kind-faced older woman with eyes like Celine's, pressing a small leather satchel into her hands. "Run, child," the woman's voice echoed. "The ash leaf will guide you. The prophecy must be protected." The vision faded. He was left with the echo of that word. Prophecy? This time. Ronan didn't lash out. Instead, he made a decision, a critical one. If he couldn't fight this thing, then he would study it. He would observe. He would learn. That was his only path forward. This was his point of no return. His immediate goal shifted from domination to analysis. His personal stake was no longer just about pack security. It was about his own sanity. His eyes fell on the leather satchel lying near her, the very one from the vision. From there, he moved to the small crate in the corner where he kept emergency rations. He pulled out a water skin and a hard piece of bread. He walked back and set them on the floor, a few feet away from her. She flinched, expecting a blow, but her eyes widened in surprise when she saw the offering. "You're no use to me, dead," he grunted. The words an excuse for an act that felt dangerously close to care. It was a pragmatic choice, he told himself. Nothing more, rather than returning to loom by the fire. He sat down against the opposite wall, his back to the cold stone. He crossed his arms over his chest, his gaze never leaving her. He was still her captor. She was still his prisoner. But between one breath and the next, something had fundamentally cracked. They were no longer just enemies. They were two people trapped on the same side of a supernatural storm. And the only way out was through. In the quiet that followed, the only sounds were the crackle of the fire and the soft whisper of her breathing. She huddled on the other side of the cabin, a small, wary animal, and he just watched. His goal had shifted. It was no longer about breaking a spy. It was about understanding a curse. Because that's what this had to be. A curse meant to drive him mad. He watched her nibble at the hard bread, her movements slow, hesitant. He watched her sip from the water skin, her eyes never leaving him. Beneath the weight of his stare, he saw her tremble, but she didn't look away. There was steel in her, a surprising core of strength that his old alpha instincts respected. Even as his conscious mind screamed enemy, he tried to piece it together. The visions, her strange calming power, the impossible scent of ash leaf clinging to her like a shroud. None of it made sense. What's worse? A part of him. A deep, primal part he had buried with Maeve. Felt a pull toward her. It was a faint hum beneath his skin. A low thrum of awareness that infuriated him. And then, the air thickened again. He didn't fight it this time. Instead, He closed his eyes and let the wave wash over him. I have to see. I have to know. The world bloomed behind his eyes. Not his memory, hers. He saw an older woman, her face a web of kind wrinkles, her eyes the same stormy gray as the prisoner's. She was pressing a small leather satchel into the girl's hands. Her own hands shook. "They will hunt you," the woman whispered, her voice laced with a desperate love. "Vero will not allow the prophecy to be fulfilled by another. He wants to control it or destroy it." "What prophecy?" the girl asked, her voice tight with fear. "The solstice will call to the last sun," the grandmother murmured, her gaze darting towards the door. "He is broken, child, a ghost, but the ash leaf will guide you. Your blood will awaken his." The vision shattered, leaving behind only the echo of those words. Last sun, ash leaf, prophecy. Ronan's eyes snapped open. His heart was hammering against his ribs. He looked at the woman, at Celine. He now knew her name was. Somehow. And then his gaze dropped to the small leather satchel clutched in her hands. It was the same one. The exact same one. He was the last son of his line. He was the ghost. And she was the impossible answer to a prophecy he'd never even known existed. As the echo faded, the space between them burned with unspoken truths. He was the last son. She was the prophecy. It was insane. And yet, he had seen it. He had felt the truth of it in her grandmother's terror. He had to know more. Which meant, he had to do the one thing he hadn't done in 10 years. He had to be vulnerable. He had to ask. But the words caught in his throat, choked by a decade of mistrust. His mind spun. How could he ask her about a vision without sounding like a madman? More importantly, how could he show that weakness to a Stonefang? Because no matter what the vision said, she still carried their scent. Instead, he cleared his throat. The sound was loud in the oppressive silence. "Are you hurt?" The question felt stupid, inadequate. But it was a start. A bridge across the chasm of their hatred. She looked up, startled by the sound of his voice without its usual snarl. She shook her head, a small, jerky movement. "No." Her voice was barely a whisper. He had to push. He had to know if she remembered. "Your grandmother," he began, his own voice feeling foreign, hesitant. "In the dream, she mentioned a prophecy." Her head snapped up, her eyes wide with a mixture of fear and something else, a flicker of recognition. Her knuckles turned white where she clutched the satchel. "You saw her," she breathed. "You saw my grandmother." "We both did," he confirmed, the admission costing him more than he wanted to admit. "It's this magic, the solstice, as if fate demanded it." She flinched at the word solstice, a memory trying to break through the fog of her mind. "She told me to run," Celine whispered, more to herself than to him. "She said he would hunt me." "Vero," Ronan supplied, the name like poison on his tongue. He watched her face closely. He saw her recoil, a visceral reaction of pure terror. So, she remembered her father. She remembered the monster. That's why she was running. Because even a caged bird knows the shadow of the hawk. With every heartbeat, the pieces were clicking into place, forming a picture he didn't want to see. A picture that put him and his most hated enemy at the center of a destiny he never asked for. He knew then, with a sinking certainty, that whatever answers he was looking for, whatever truth would unravel this curse, it was inside that bag. His gaze fixed on the leather satchel. It was a simple thing, worn leather, a single cord holding it shut. Yet, it held the weight of a prophecy. It held the key to her past. And maybe, just maybe, the reason his world had been turned upside down. His every instinct screamed at him to just take it. He was the alpha. She was his prisoner. It was his right. But then, He remembered the vision of her calming his beast. He remembered the fragile truce they had just formed. The Ronin of an hour ago would have ripped it from her hands. But that Ronin was gone, replaced by someone more desperate, more uncertain, to make things worse. He knew that if he used force, whatever delicate connection this magic had forged between them would shatter, and he needed that connection. He needed to understand. So, he tried a different path, the path of reason. The vision, he began, his voice low and even, a calculated calm he did not feel. Your grandmother said the ash leaf would guide you. What is it? What's inside? Her body tensed, her arms wrapping protectively around the bag. I don't know, she said, but her eyes darted away. A lie. Maybe she didn't know everything, but she knew something. He felt it, clear as day. Don't lie to me, he warned, a hint of the old steel creeping back into his voice. We are trapped in this, whatever this is, together. Secrets will get us killed. He leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees, trying to appear non-threatening. It was a difficult pose for a man of his size. I saw her love for you. She was trying to save you. Let me help you understand why. This was a test. A test of her trust, and a test of his control. Could he persuade her where he would have once commanded? Her thoughts spun. He could see it in the way her eyes darted around the cabin, looking for an escape she knew wasn't there. The space between them burned with a silent, heavy negotiation. He decided to push one last time, to lay his own vulnerability bare as a final, desperate gambit. That scent on you, the ash leaf, it was my mother's scent. I haven't smelled it in 10 years, not since the day she died. Her breath caught, her world tilted, her gaze snapped to his, and for the first time, he saw something other than fear. He saw a flicker of shared loss, a connection forged in the ashes of their pasts, between them. Something cracked. He held her gaze, his heart pounding a slow, heavy rhythm, without another word. He simply asked, his voice low and raw. What? Are you protecting? Her name hung in the air between them, an unanswered question. What are you protecting? As the silence stretched, her grip on the small leather bag tightened. Her knuckles were white. Her stormy gray eyes darted from his face to the door. Then back again, a cornered animal looking for an escape that didn't exist. He could see the war inside her, the desperate need to keep her secrets, versus the terrifying realization that he might be her only hope. He had to tread carefully, because he knew, deep down, that one wrong move would send her scurrying back into the fortress of her silence. He needed that bag, more than he needed his next breath. It was the nexus, the point where the visions, the prophecy, and the impossible scent of his past all converged. I am not your enemy, he said, his voice softer than he'd intended. It was a lie, and a truth. His wolf still snarled at her stonefang scent. But the man saw the ghost of a prophecy in her eyes. Not anymore. Still, she hesitated. He could feel her fear, a sharp, metallic tang in the air. No matter how hard she tried to hide it, it clung to her. He had put it there, with his chains, with his rage, which meant he had to offer something in return, a piece of his own broken self, a gesture of trust. That scent, he began, the words feeling rough and clumsy in his mouth. The ash leaf. It was my mother's. She was the pack's healer. A memory surfaced, his mother, her hands stained with herbs, humming a soft tune as she worked, a wave of grief, so sharp and sudden it almost stole his breath, washed over him. He let the prisoner see it in his eyes. He let her see the crack in his armor. I haven't smelled it in 10 years, not since the day she died. The day of the massacre. Her breath caught. That was it. That was the key. He saw her defenses crumble, not before his strength. but before his pain. Her world tilted. In his grief, she saw a reflection of her own loss, a story she couldn't remember but felt in her bones. Between one breath and the next, her fingers loosened their grip. Her movements were slow, deliberate. Her eyes never left his, searching for the slightest hint of a lie, of a trap. She found none. Without another word, she nudged the leather satchel across the dusty stone floor. It slid to a stop just inches from his boots. An offering. A desperate leap of faith. His heart skipped. He reached for it, his hand trembling slightly. The answers he so desperately craved were finally within his grasp. His fingers closed around the worn leather. It was soft. Old. It pulsed with a faint, almost imperceptible warmth. The air thickened. He could feel the weight of destiny settling in the small, suffocating space of the cabin. With his gaze locked on her wary eyes, he slowly, carefully, untied the leather cord. He tipped the bag. What followed was a small cascade of dried, silvery leaves, ash leaf. The scent rose up, pure and potent, a ghost from his childhood. It smelled of safety, of home, of his mother. A chest-aching sorrow threatened to overwhelm him. But there was something else inside, a small, tightly folded piece of hide. His hands shook now. He could barely get a grip on it. He felt it, clear as day. This was the heart of the matter. He unfolded it, and his world ended, for the second time in his life. It was a drawing, faded, ancient, two crests, their lines drawn in what looked like berry juice and charcoal, the snarling wolf of the Blackwood, and the radiant sunburst of the Sunwood, his mother's sister pack, wiped out generations ago, or so the story said. The words from the vision roared in his mind. Last son, prophecy, your blood will awaken his... He looked up from the drawing. His vision swam. He looked at her, really looked at her, not the prisoner, not the Stonefang spy. He saw the high cheekbones of the Sunwood line. He saw the strength in her jaw. He saw the ancient magic sleeping in her stormy gray eyes. Then, his gaze dropped. To her wrist. To the raw. Red. Chafed skin around the heavy iron cuff he had put there. The sight was a physical blow. A brand on his soul. He had chained her. He had chained the last daughter of the Sunwood. He had chained the Omega from the prophecy. He had chained the last. Desperate hope of his people. A choked, guttural sound tore from his throat. It was the sound of a man breaking. He stumbled backwards, away from her, away from the evidence of his monstrous sin. His face was a mask of pure horror, not at her, but at the beast he saw in himself. He hit the opposite wall, the impact jarring his teeth. He couldn't breathe. The air was too thick with his shame. Before she could move, before she could even process the violent shift in his demeanor, he stared at her, his eyes wild with a new kind of agony. And just like that, everything he thought he knew turned to dust and ash. What had he done? In the echo of his own strangled cry. Ronan's world narrowed to a single, horrifying point, the iron cuff on her wrist. It was a symbol of his blindness, his arrogance, his unforgivable rage. He had to get it off her. Now. He lurched forward, scrambling for the key he'd left on the stone mantelpiece. His movements were clumsy, jerky. All his alpha grace was gone, replaced by a frantic, desperate urgency. He saw her flinch away from him, her body pressing hard against the wall, a small cry of fear escaping her lips. She thought he was coming to hurt her again, and that sound, that small, terrified sound, it was another knife in his gut. No. He rasped, his voice raw and broken. He held up the key, his hand shaking so violently he could barely keep his grip. I'm sorry. The words were pathetic, meaningless, dust in the face of what he'd done. He approached her slowly this time, as if she were a wild, wounded thing that might bolt. which she was, and he was the one who had wounded her. He dropped to his knees before her, making himself smaller, lowering his head to show he was no longer a threat. The space between them burned with his shame. His fingers fumbled at the lock. He couldn't look at her face. He couldn't bear to see the terror he had put there. He focused only on the cold, unforgiving iron. Click. The sound was like a gunshot in the silent cabin. The heavy cuff fell away from her wrist, clattering against the stone floor with a sound of finality. It was done. She was free. But he wasn't. Instead of rising, instead of speaking, he did the only thing his soul demanded. He sank lower, bowing his head until his forehead met the cold, dusty floorboards at her feet. He stayed there, an alpha on his knees, not a king, not a warrior, just a broken man begging for a forgiveness he knew he could never earn. As the silence roared, a new sound cut through the howl of the blizzard outside. It was faint, distant, but unmistakable. A howl. It was not a Blackwood wolf. His head snapped up, his eyes locking with hers, the hunter's. They were close. His blood ran cold. The woman he had to protect, the woman who held the key to their future, was the very one he had just finished terrorizing, and her father's army was at the door. In the echo of that distant howl, the fragile quiet of the cabin shattered. Ronan was on his feet in an instant, his body moving on pure instinct. The time for guilt was over. The time for penance could wait. Right now. There was only one thing that mattered. Getting her to safety. Because he knew that howl. It was the sound of a Stonefang hunter. A sound that promised death. "We have to go," he said. His voice a low, urgent command. He reached for her, his hand outstretched. But then he hesitated in remembering the chains, remembering her fear. He let his hand drop. "Now." Her stormy gray eyes were wide, locked on his. She'd heard the howl, too. Her wolf. Dormant and hidden, stirred with an ancient fear. She didn't know what scared her more, the sound from the darkness outside, or the terrifying, transformed man in front of her. But deep down, she knew the truth. He was her only chance. Without another word, she nodded. A single, sharp dip of her chin. That was all he needed. He grabbed his heavy fur cloak from its peg and, without thinking, wrapped it around her small shoulders. The cloak swallowed her, smelling of him, of pine and cold stone and winter. It was an act of pure protection. Next, he kicked dirt over the fire, plunging the cabin into near darkness, lit only by the gray, swirling light of the blizzard outside the single window. "Stay close to me," he ordered, his voice a low rumble. And then, they were outside, plunged into the screaming chaos of the storm. The wind was a physical blow, a solid wall of ice and fury. It tore at them, trying to rip her from his side. Sleet stung his face like a thousand tiny needles. He instinctively moved to shield her, turning his larger body into a bulwark against the gale. Her smaller form pressed against his back, seeking shelter. The walk to the main den was a brutal, punishing journey more than once. Her feet slipped in the deepening snow, and he caught her, his grip sure and steady. He could feel the tremors running through her body, from cold, from fear. He hated it. He hated that he was the cause of so much of that fear, which meant he had to get her to safety, to prove with actions what his words never could. Eventually, her steps faltered completely. Her body, already weakened, couldn't take any more before she could fall. He swept her up into his arms. She let out a small, startled gasp, but didn't fight him. As he carried her, her head lolled against his chest, her breath warm against his frozen skin, as if pulled by a string. His own heart gave a painful lurch. This felt right. Terribly. Impossibly right. By the time he reached the hidden stone door of the den, he knew one thing for certain. He had brought this storm upon them, and now he had to lead them through it. The moment the heavy stone door ground open, a wave of warm air hit them, thick with the scents of home, roasting meat, burning pine, and the familiar, earthy smell of his pack. Ronan stepped across the threshold, still carrying Celine, and the den fell silent. Utterly, completely, silent. What followed was the sudden, unnerving attention of 24 pairs of eyes. They stared, their expressions a mixture of shock, confusion, and dawning hostility. He felt their collective gaze like a physical weight. They saw their alpha, the one who had preached isolation for a decade, holding a strange woman wrapped in his own cloak, a woman who reeked of the enemy. He gently set Celine on her own 2 feet but kept a protective hand on her shoulder. Her world tilted, surrounded by the suspicious glares of wolves who saw her as a threat. He could feel her trembling beneath his palm, but she held her chin high, her gaze sweeping over the silent crowd with a courage he hadn't expected. And then, a figure emerged from the crowd, parting the wolves like a ship through water. Kalia. Her face was a mask of cold, hard stone, her eyes, usually filled with a fierce, maternal love for him, were now chips of ice. She stopped a few feet away, her gaze raking over Celine with undisguised contempt. The tension in the den broke, replaced by a low, threatening murmur. "What is this? Ronan?" Kalia's voice was not loud, but it cut through the silence like a shard of glass. "You bring a viper into our home? A stone fang?" The way she spat the word made it a curse. "She is under my protection, Kalia," Ronan said, his voice low and steady, a clear warning. This was the first test. He knew he had to stand firm, because if he faltered now, all would be lost. "Your protection?" Kalia laughed, a harsh, bitter sound devoid of any humor. "She smells of the butchers who killed my mate, who killed your father, who killed Maeve." Her name hung in the air, a poisoned dart. Ronan flinched. The pack growled in agreement, their loyalty torn between their grieving den mother and their alpha. Before either could speak again, the scout, Jorik, burst through the crowd, his face pale with panic. "Hunters, alpha," he gasped, his voice cracking. "At the northern ridge, 3 of them. They tested the perimeter. They were watching the den. They know we're here." A wave of fear washed through the pack. Kalia seized the moment, her eyes blazing as she pointed a trembling finger at Celine. "See?" she shrieked. "I told you! She brings death with her!" In the echo of Kalia's shriek, chaos rippled through the den. The wolves shifted nervously, their fear and suspicion curdling the warm air. Low growls rumbled through the cavern. They were looking at Celine not as a person, but as the living embodiment of the danger at their door. They trusted Kalia's grief, a grief they all shared, more than they trusted their alpha's sudden, inexplicable change of heart. He felt his authority, the bedrock of his entire life, cracking beneath his feet. On the other hand, Celine did something that shocked him, no matter how hard she tried to hide her trembling. She straightened her back. She met Kalia's hateful glare not with fear, but with a quiet, steely resolve. In that moment, she didn't look like a prisoner or a victim. She looked like a queen. That was all he needed. Her strength became his, as if summoned by her courage. He stepped forward, deliberately placing his body between Celine and Kalia, between his future and his past. The space between them burned. He was making his choice, and he was making it in front of them all. "Enough!" His voice was not a shout. It was something more terrifying. It was the full, unbridled power of his alpha command, a sound that vibrated in the very stone of the den and rattled the bones of every wolf present. The den fell instantly, deathly silent. Every eye was on him. He turned his head slightly, his gaze sweeping over his pack. He saw their fear, their doubt, their confusion. So, he had to give them a new truth to believe in. "Her name is Celine," he declared, his voice ringing with absolute finality. "She does not carry the Stonefang mark because she is not one of them. She is the last daughter of the Sunwood, our lost sister pack." A gasp rippled through the crowd. Kalia's face went pale with shock. "The prophecy Kalia told us as pups was not a fairy tale," Ronan continued, pressing his advantage. "She is the Omega of the Solstice. She is here because fate demanded it, because our survival depends on it." He let his words sink in, a heavy stone dropping into a still pond. He could see the conflict in their eyes, the struggle between ingrained hatred and nascent hope. Then, he drew the line. "She is under my protection. She is one of us now. Anyone who stands against her stands against me." The silence that followed was different. It was the silence of a pack fractured. Some looked at Celine with a new, dawning awe. Others, their loyalty to Kalia unwavering, looked at her with even deeper suspicion. Kalia herself just stared at him, her expression one of cold, profound betrayal. The battle lines were no longer just outside the den. They had been drawn right through the heart of his home, in the quiet that followed his decree. The air in the den remained thick with a stubborn, resentful silence. The hunters were out there. And his pack was broken. He needed them united. He needed them to trust him. But trust was a fragile thing, and he had already shattered it. "We fortify the Eastern Pass," he commanded, his voice echoing in the tense cavern. "Their numbers are greater, so we use the terrain. Jorik, take 3 wolves and block the narrow trail with fallen logs. I want it impassable." The young wolf. Jorik nodded, his eyes wide with a mixture of fear and loyalty. But then, an older wolf named Orin, one of Kalia's staunchest supporters, stepped forward. "And the witch?" Orin snarled, his gaze flicking toward Celine. "What is her part in this plan? Will she be muttering curses from the back?" Ronan's jaw tightened. "She has knowledge of their tactics. She will stay with me. Her insight could be the very thing that saves us." Because he knew, deep down, that her mind was now their sharpest weapon. Orin scoffed, turning to the wolves assigned to Jorik. "You hear that? We're to trust a Stonefang's insight." He spat on the ground. "I'd sooner trust a snake." Before Ronan could enforce his command, a piercing howl echoed from outside. Close this time. Too close. It was a signal. An attack. Without warning, 3 Stonefang hunters burst from the trees near the Eastern Pass, moving with brutal speed. They had found a weakness. Jorik and his small team were caught completely off guard. To make things worse, Orin and his 2 cronies, who should have been providing cover, hesitated for a single, fatal heartbeat. They looked to Ronan, then to Kalia, their loyalties fractured. That single heartbeat was all it took. One of the hunters, a massive brute with a scarred muzzle, slammed into Jorik, sending the young wolf flying. A sickening crack echoed through the trees. A yelp of pure agony, a roar of pure, unadulterated fury ripped from Ronan's throat. He launched himself into the fray, a black-furred blur of teeth and claws. He was a force of nature, a storm of righteous vengeance. He tore into the hunters, driving them back with the sheer ferocity of his attack. They were not expecting the alpha himself. They scrambled back into the forest, leaving behind the scent of their blood and their fear. But the damage was done. Ronan shifted back, his chest heaving. He rushed to Jorik's side. The young wolf was alive. But his leg, it was bent at an unnatural angle, as Ronan knelt. The scent of his own pack's blood filled his nostrils. A scent that had been spilled not by the enemy's strength, but by his own pack's division, back in the main den. The air was thick with the metallic tang of blood and the bitter sting of accusation. Jorik lay on a bed of furs, his leg bound in a crude splint. his whimpers of pain a constant, grim reminder of their failure. Celine stood near the fire, her arms wrapped around herself, looking pale and lost. Every eye in the cavern darted between her and him. They were looking for someone to blame. And then, Kalia gave them a target. She rose from Yorick's side, her hands stained with the poultice she'd been applying. Her movements were stiff, her face a mask of cold, controlled fury. She walked until she stood directly in front of Ronan, forcing the rest of the pack to form a circle around them. This was not a private conversation. This was a public trial. "This is what she brings, Ronan," Kalia said, her voice quiet. But each word was a perfectly sharpened dagger aimed at his heart. "Pain, weakness, our own blood spilled on our own lands." "This was not her fault, Kalia," he countered, his own voice low. "This was Orin's hesitation. This was our division." "And who brought that division into our home?" she shot back, her voice rising now. "Who brought the viper into our den and called her our queen? You talk of prophecies and destiny. I see only a stone-fang witch who has clouded your mind and turned you against your own family." He saw the pack nodding. He saw their fear twisting into agreement. He was losing them. Because Kalia wasn't just speaking for herself. She was speaking for their shared grief. A wound that had never been allowed to heal. With every heartbeat, he felt his world shrinking, the walls of the den closing in. In that moment, she delivered the final blow. She raised her chin, her eyes, once so full of love for him, now holding only the cold finality of a judge. "So you must choose," she declared, her voice ringing through the cavern. "Her or us, the pack that has bled for you, the pack that has followed you through a decade of darkness, or the strange witch who will lead us all to our graves." She paused, letting the weight of her words settle. Several of the older, most respected wolves, including a silent, shamed Orin, moved to stand behind her, a house divided. "If she stays, Ronan," Kalia whispered, her voice cracking with a heartbreaking sincerity, "we go." She turned her back on him then, a gesture of finality, a betrayal born from love and fear. And just like that, Ronan, the Alpha of Blackwood, was utterly, completely alone. He didn't know how long he had been sitting there, the snow seeping through his clothes, chilling him to the bone. The blizzard had finally broken, leaving behind a world of eerie, muffled silence. He was at the petrified oak, Maeve's grave, the place where his life had first ended. It seemed a fitting place for it to end again. His thoughts spun in a dizzying vortex of failure. He had failed to protect Maeve. He had failed to protect Celine from his own cruelty. And now, he had failed to lead his pack. He was not a leader. He was a poison. Everything he touched, he destroyed. He saw it with a terrible, soul-crushing clarity. He was the common denominator in every tragedy. Can a man defined by who he has lost learn to live for who he has found? The question that had haunted him for days now had its answer. And the answer was no. No matter how hard he tried, the ghosts of his past were too strong. His attempt to build a future with Celina, to embrace this insane prophecy, was not honoring the dead. It was desecrating their memory. It was asking his pack to forgive a wound that was still festering. It was a selfish, foolish dream. Truth be told, Kalia was right. He had brought this danger, this division, upon them. He had been so blinded by the shock of the prophecy, so desperate for a sliver of hope after a decade of darkness, that he hadn't seen the cost. And the cost was his pack, the very people he had sworn to protect. The air grew still. The weight of his guilt was a physical thing, a heavy stone pressing down on his chest, making it impossible to breathe. There was only one path forward, one solution that could save them. It was a choice born not of anger, but of a despair so profound. It felt like peace. He had to let her go. He had to send Selene away. Cast her out into the wilderness, back to the fate she had been running from. It was the only way to heal the rift in his pack. It was the only way to prepare them for the fight against Vero. It was the only way to save them from him. As the first rays of a weak, watery dawn pierced through the gray clouds, Ronan made his decision. The sacrifice was absolute. He would cut out the last piece of his own heart to save the whole. He would become the monster they all thought he was one last time. For them, he would save his pack, even if it meant destroying himself completely. As the first weak rays of dawn painted the snow in shades of gray and lavender, he sat there, a hollowed-out man. He had made his choice, a choice of ash and endings. He would send her away. It was the only way. And then, he heard the crunch of footsteps in the snow, soft, hesitant. He didn't look up. It was probably Kalia, come to witness his final surrender. But the scent that reached him wasn't of bitter grief. It was of ash leaf and winter roses and a strength he was only just beginning to understand. Selene. She stopped before him, her small form wrapped in his cloak, a dark silhouette against the rising sun. He could feel her stare, but he couldn't meet it. He kept his eyes fixed on Maeve's unmarked grave. "I'm leaving," he said, his voice flat, devoid of all emotion. "And you are, too. I will see you safely to the edge of the human lands. After that, you are on your own." The silence stretched. He expected her to plead, to cry, to show fear. Instead, a quiet, furious anger radiated from her. "No." The word was so simple, so final. It shocked him into looking up. Her stormy eyes were not filled with tears. They were blazing with a fire he hadn't seen before. The fire of a queen. "You don't get to do that," she said, her voice trembling not with fear, but with rage. "You don't get to decide my fate. You don't get to use me as a sacrifice to appease your own ghosts." Before he could speak, she took a step closer. "I was in your head, Ronan. Remember? I saw her. I saw your love for Maeve. I felt your heart break." Her voice softened for a moment, a flicker of empathy in the storm. "And I am sorry for your pain, truly. But I am not her. And my life will not be a footnote in her tragedy." Her words were like a slap in the face, a jolt of lightning to his frozen heart. "My grandmother," she continued, her voice rising with power, "the last queen of the Sunwood, sent me here. This land, this pack, it is my birthright as much as it is yours. It is the last piece of my family I have left." She took another step, her chin held high, her gaze unwavering. "So I am not leaving. This is my home, this is my fight. And I will not be cast out by a sad, broken king who is too afraid to live." Her instincts surged. Her wolf, which had been a frightened whisper, now pressed forward, a current of undeniable power. "I will fight for this pack," she declared, her voice ringing in the cold morning air. "With you, or without you." He looked at her then, really looked at her, not as a burden, not as a prophecy, but as an equal, a queen. And in the face of her unbreakable will, the ghost of his despair began to fade. They walked back to the den together, the silence between them no longer heavy with grief, but humming with a new, dangerous energy. Her choice had become his. Her strength had reignited the last dying ember of his own. His goal was no longer to surrender. It was to be worthy of the queen who refused to let him quit. Inside, the den was tense. The few wolves who had not sided with Kalia watched them enter, their eyes full of uncertainty. Yorick, the young wolf, tried to rise from his pallet, his face tight with pain. Ronan held up a hand. "Rest," he commanded, his voice gentle but firm. Then, He turned to the others. There were only five of them, five loyal wolves against Varro's army. The odds were impossible. Our last plan failed, Ronan said, the admission tasting like ash in his mouth. It failed because I was trying to lead a pack that was already broken. It failed because I acted alone. He looked at Celine, a silent apology passing between them. That changes now. As if pulled by a string, he knelt on the floor, clearing a space in the dirt. Celine knelt beside him, together, using a shard of rock. They began to draw a map of the territory. Varro will attack from the east, Ronan explained, his finger tracing a line. It's the most direct path, but it forces him through the Serpent's Pass, a bottleneck. We can use that. His warriors are disciplined, Celine added, her voice clear and steady. But they rely on their alpha's rage. If you can draw Varro into a direct confrontation, his pack will be focused only on that fight. And what about the rest of them? One of the loyal wolves. A grizzled old male named Finn asked. Ronan looked at Celine. This was the heart of their gamble. That's where the prophecy comes in. He turned to her. The calm. The power you used on me in the cabin, can you do it again, on a larger scale? She met his gaze, her own full of a fierce determination. I don't know, she admitted, her honesty a breath of fresh air. But my grandmother said my blood would awaken yours. Maybe it's not just about calming. Maybe it's about connecting. A high-risk plan, a desperate hope. It was all they had. We will hold the pass, Fenn declared, his voice a low growl of conviction. The other four wolves nodded, their eyes burning with a new fire. They saw it too. They saw the true partnership between their alpha and this strange, powerful woman. They saw a future. And for the first time in a decade, so did Ronan. That night, the world was bathed in the cold, silver light of a full moon. They were in position, hidden amongst the high rocks overlooking the Serpent's Pass. Below, the narrow canyon was a river of shadows. The wind whispered through the pines, carrying with it the scent of snow and the promise of violence. Every snap of a twig, every distant cry of a night bird, sent a jolt of adrenaline through him. His small team of five warriors was hidden nearby, silent and ready. But his attention was fixed on the woman beside him, Celine. She was staring down into the pass, her face pale but her expression firm. Her hands were clenched into tight fists at her side. He could feel her fear. It was a faint tremor in the air, a scent like ozone before a lightning strike, with every heartbeat. His own anxiety grew, not for himself, but for her. He had brought her into this. His war, his failure, now. Her life depended on a desperate plan and a power neither of them truly understood. As the silence stretched, her voice, soft and trembling, cut through the tension. Are you scared? He turned to look at her, her stormy eyes reflecting the moonlight. He considered lying. He considered giving her a brave alpha's speech full of courage and certainty, but he was done with lies. No, he said, his voice a low, honest rumble. Not of dying. He paused, the admission costing him a piece of his pride. I'm scared of failing you. Again. Her breath caught, her gaze softened. The space between them burned. Not with the hostile tension of before, but with something new. Something fragile and powerful and deeply, terrifyingly intimate. Before she could move, before either of them could speak. Her body moved on instinct. She reached out, her small, cold hand covering his. Her touch was like a spark on dry tinder. It sent a jolt of warmth through his entire body, a stark contrast to the icy dread in his gut. Her fingers laced with his, a simple, perfect fit, as their skin touched. He felt it, clear as day. The bond between them, the strange magic of the solstice, pulsed. It was a silent promise, a shared resolve. They would face what was coming, together, in that moment. A horn blew in the distance, a deep, guttural sound that echoed off the canyon walls. It was Vero's signal. The hunt had begun. In the echo of that horn, the world erupted. From the shadows of the canyon, they came, a tide of snarling. Snapping beasts, the Stone Fang army. They moved with brutal efficiency, a wave of dark fur and hate crashing against the rocks. And his pack, his tiny band of five loyal warriors, met them head-on. It was chaos, a symphony of roars, yelps, and the sickening crunch of bone. He shifted, the change of familiar fire in his veins, and launched himself into the fray. He was a whirlwind of black fury, his claws and teeth his only law. He fought to protect his warriors. He fought to protect the woman on the ridge behind him. He fought for a future he had only just dared to believe in. But they were too many. For everyone they took down, two more seemed to take its place. And then, he saw him. Vero, the Alpha of Stonefang. He was larger than Ronan remembered, his fur the color of a thundercloud, his eyes burning with a cold, triumphant fire. He wasn't fighting. He was watching, directing his warriors with cruel, subtle gestures, and his gaze was fixed on the ridge, on Selene, a possessive, primal rage, hotter than any he had ever known, surged through Ronan. Mine. The thought was not his own. It was a growl from the soul of his wolf. He charged Vero. Their collision was like two mountains crashing together. They were a maelstrom of claws and fury. A personal war in the heart of a larger battle. Vero was strong, vicious. He taunted Ronan with whispers of the past, of Maeve, of his failure. And Ronan, fueled by a decade of hate, was beginning to tire. He was losing. Just as Varro's teeth lunged for his throat, a strange silence began to fall over the battlefield. He saw it from the corner of his eye. Selene. She had stepped out from the cover of the rocks. She was walking calmly towards the heart of the battle, towards where Kalia and the other Blackwood wolves watched with conflicted eyes. Vero paused, a confused snarl on his face. "Foolish girl," he growled. But Selene wasn't looking at him. Her gaze was fixed on Kalia. She stopped, the battle raging around her, and her voice, clear and powerful, cut through the chaos. "Kin." The word was not a plea, it was a command, a chord of ancient magic that resonated with the very land they stood on. It vibrated in the bones of every Blackwood wolf. He saw Kalia's eyes widen, her hatred shattering, replaced by pure, unadulterated awe, as if summoned. Kalia threw her head back and howled, not a cry of grief, but a call to arms, a call of allegiance. And from the rocks, the rest of his pack, his entire pack, answered. They poured down into the pass, a wave of gray and brown and black fur, no longer divided, but united under their true queen. The tide had turned. Vero stared in shock, his confidence broken. And in that moment, with the strength of his whole pack surging into him, Ronan struck in the quiet that followed. The only sound was the wind whispering through the pass, carrying the coppery scent of blood. The snow was stained red. Vero was dead. His army, their alpha fallen and their ranks broken by the full force of the united Blackwood pack, had scattered back into the wilderness. They had won. But victory was a heavy, weary thing. Ronan, back in his human form, leaned against a blood-spattered boulder, his body aching, his breath coming in ragged gasps. He watched as his pack moved through the aftermath. There was no celebration, only the grim, necessary work of tending to the wounded and honoring the fallen. They had lost two wolves, two brave souls who had died for their future. His chest ached with a familiar grief, but this time, it was different. It was not the lonely, hollow ache of the past. It was a shared sorrow, the price of a future won together. His gaze found Selene. She was kneeling beside Jorik, the young wolf, her hands glowing with a soft, silvery light as she pressed them against his wounded leg. A healing power, another secret, another piece of the puzzle that was her. And then he saw Kalia approaching, his body tensed. The battle was won, but the war for his pack's heart, he wasn't sure. Kalia didn't come to him. Instead, she walked directly to Celine. The den fell silent once more, every wolf watching. Kalia stopped before Celine, her old, tired face filled with an emotion he couldn't quite read. It was a mixture of shame, awe, and a deep, profound respect. Slowly, deliberately, the old den mother, the keeper of their grief, sank to one knee. She bowed her head. "My queen," Kalia whispered, her voice thick with emotion. "Forgive me." Selene stopped her healing, placing a gentle hand on Kalia's shoulder. She simply nodded, her eyes shining with unshed tears. An acceptance. A forgiveness. The moment their eyes locked, Ronan felt it. The fracture in his pack, the wound that had festered for a decade, had finally, truly, begun to heal. He watched them, the old, grieving she-wolf and the new, powerful queen, and a sense of peace settled over him. As soft and quiet as the falling snow, the war was over, all of it, now. All that was left was to figure out what came next. Come morning, a weak sun broke through the clouds, bathing the snow-covered forest in a clean, watery light. The dead had been buried with the rites of the ancestors. The wounded were healing. A fragile, exhausted peace had settled over his pack. They were diminished, but they were whole. United. He found Celine standing on the high ledge outside the main den, looking out at their territory. She was wrapped in his cloak again, a splash of dark fur against the bright, white snow. She looked small, yet she held herself with a quiet strength that seemed to command the very mountains around them. He walked to stand beside her, the silence between them no longer tense or awkward, but comfortable, companionable. "I am sorry, Celine," he said, his voice quiet, raw. The words felt small, but they needed to be said. "For the cabin, for the chains, for my blindness." She turned to look at him, her stormy gray eyes clear and deep. She didn't offer empty platitudes or easy forgiveness. She simply reached out and placed her palm gently against his cheek. Her touch was warm against his cold skin. It was not the magical calm from before. It was something far more powerful. It was a choice. "That man is gone, Ronan," she whispered. "He died in the battle, same as my father." He closed his eyes, leaning into her touch, a profound sense of relief washing over him, the weight he had carried for a decade, the ghost of his failure, finally began to lift. He was no longer the alpha of ashes. He was something new, something forged in the fire of her strength. "My whole life has been defined by an ending," he admitted, his voice thick with an emotion he couldn't name. "I don't know how to begin." A small, beautiful smile touched her lips. She took his hand, her fingers lacing with his. A perfect fit. "Then we learn together," she said, her gaze turning back to the valley, to the promise of a new spring beneath the snow. He looked out at their world, at their future. The core emotional question that had haunted his every waking moment finally had its answer. He could not only live for who he had found, he had to, because she was the only one who could teach him how. He squeezed her hand, a silent promise passing between them. "This is day one. Thank you so much for watching this video. We really appreciate you spending your time with us. If you enjoyed what you saw, we've got a whole library of other videos packed with more great content just like this waiting for you on our channel. So, why not dive into another one right now? And hey, if you want to make sure you don't miss out on our next upload, hit that subscribe button and the notification bell. We'd love to have you join our community and see you in the next video. Thanks again."